Next up is Friendly Fire, A Voice for Veterans with Don Kimball, who is himself an Air Force veteran. Friendly Fire is broadcast every Friday at 10 a.m. and rebroadcast on Tuesday at 6 p.m. right here on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and on the web at gmcr.org.
This is Friendly Fire, A Voice for Veterans. As we continue our series about the forever chemicals known as PFAS, we talk with Brian Goodman and Kyla Bennett. Brian is a lieutenant in a major metropolitan fire department, and because of suspected PFAS poisoning, has to fight health issues as well as fires. Kyla is a science policy advisor with the nonprofit PEER, Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. Stay tuned. And that's John Farnham with You're the Voice. Welcome to Friendly Fire, A Voice for Veterans. I'm your host, Don Kimball. It's a pleasure to have you along today. We're recording from a remote location we call the Sacred Feather Studios, and we're very proud and pleased to be on KURU FM 89.1 Silver City, New Mexico, or on the web at gmcr.org. And now let's go to our interview with Brian Goodman and Kyla Bennett. With us today, we're very pleased and proud to have two activists on the front line of fighting contamination from the quote-unquote forever chemicals, PFAS, which is used in firefighting and many, many other applications that people use, such as Gore-Tex and things of that nature. With us, we have Brian Goodman. He's calling from Virginia. He is a lieutenant at a greater metropolitan fire department. And also joining us, Kyla Bennett. Kyla Bennett is calling us from Massachusetts. She is the science policy advisor for PEER, Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. We welcome you both to Friendly Fire. And Brian, let's start with you. How long have you been working for the fire department?
Well, how you doing, Don? First thing I'd just like to say is that I'm representing myself. I'm not representing any municipality, and all the opinions that I have are my own. With that being said, I've been in the fire service for 14 years.
And you've seen a lot of changes with the way that fires are fought since you started, have you?
I have, absolutely. You know, with a lot of the science coming out of NIOSH, what we've learned is that, you know, the aggressive fire attack of the early 2000s has kind of gone away. We're trying to be smarter with how we approach things, and we're using more transitional attacks, which means giving it a sip, quote unquote, from the yard and then going ahead and make entry as you reset the environment.
Kyla, you are with the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. And how big is that group?
We're a small nonprofit. We're based outside of Washington, D.C., and we have about 14 people. We have a big D.C. office. Well, not big, but that's our biggest group of people are in the D.C. area. And then we've got offices in California, Colorado, Tennessee, Florida, and outside of Boston for the New England office.
Okay. And how do you and Brian know each other?
Brian is actually a client of ours. So PEER started working. We're basically a whistleblower organization. We support and defend municipal, state, and federal employees who work in the environmental arena. And I started working with some firefighters on Nantucket, and Brian contacted us, and we're helping him get out his message of how destructive and harmful these PFAS chemicals are.
Are you helping the people who work with these dangerous chemicals, the PFAS, the forever chemicals, to in the legal arena or the medical arena? In other words, getting them, helping them get tested to find out what their exposure level has been, or exactly how do you folks interface?
So we're doing a couple of things. We have so many PFAS issues around the country because these forever chemicals are ubiquitous now. They're in everything. They're in dental floss and, you know, your rain gear and makeup and your couches and carpets and guitar strings. They're in so much, so many consumer goods, pesticides, artificial turf. and of course, in firefighting gear. So the firefighters' turnout gear is just chock full of this stuff. So we have a number of firefighter clients, and what we're trying to do is ensure that we can get the PFAS out of their turnout gear. For a long time, everyone thought the PFAS was just in the foam, the AFFF firefighting foam, and that it's being reduced, and we're moving away from that in most situations. However, the fact remains that this PFAS is actually in the turnout gear that firefighters are forced to wear. And it's impossible to get it out because there are no PFAS-free turnout gear available in the market. So we're trying to work with the National Fire Protection Association, the NFPA, which is the standard setting agency that insists that PFAS is in the turnout gear. And we're trying to convince them that they need to get rid of that standard.
Brian, are you represented by a union?
I am.
And what's the union's stance on what's happening with PFAS?
As far as Virginia goes, we're a right to work in an at-will state. So our union doesn't have the power that they may have in our northern states.
What's the name of the union, Brian?
The IAFF.
Okay. And that's an international Association of Firefighters.
Yeah. Every state has a group of local chapters.
So when you started to reach out about this issue, Brian, what was it that exactly lit the fire?
Well, you know, I had a personal situation that happened, my wife and I, where we thought she was pregnant. It was during COVID, obviously, so we couldn't get into her OB. We finally got in. She ended up not having any issues after a bunch of humiliating tests. The attention turned quickly to me, and they noted pretty quickly that there was hormone irregularities and no sperm. So after a litany of tests over the course of a year and a half, we found out that my body doesn't have the ability to regulate testosterone and estradiol, which coincidentally, DuPont stated in 1992, a study with male rats that also didn't have the ability to regulate testosterone and estradiol, which led me to researching quite a bit, ultimately ended up writing defenseless.
Well, we're sorry that you got these health issues that you're having to address, and hopefully there's something that can be done. How often are you tested for the levels now? And are you having to pay for this on your own, or is the municipality that you're working for paying for this? How does that work? I mean, it must be expensive.
It is, and it has been. I don't think any municipality at this point or insurance company at this point is covering the PFAS testing. As far as the hormone levels, yeah, I have to get those tested all the time, as well as I have to get testicular cancer tested twice a year. So I go in September and I go in March, because what ultimately ended up becoming my diagnosis was Sertoli cell only syndrome with an unknown pathology, which means they don't have a clue on why I have it, but I have it. And that's widely considered a precursor for testicular cancer.
Kyla, your group here, do you interface at all with unions like the one that Brian's in, or is it mostly with individuals?
We do sometimes work with unions. And the interesting thing about the IAFF, you know, the International Association of Firefighters, they had their annual meeting earlier this year. It was virtual this year, which was actually good. And our client on Nantucket, Sean Mitchell, who's a firefighter on Nantucket, introduced a resolution at that IAFF annual meeting that would require the PFAS industry to no longer sponsor the union, the IAFF. They would sponsor their cancer summits. They would sponsor their meetings. And the industry was way too close with the union. And they want the PFAS out of the gear, and they want the PFAS industry out of their union. And it passed overwhelmingly. It passed 99% to 1%. So it's very clear that the members of the IAFF around the country are sick and tired of getting sick from their gear. I mean, these men and women are heroes. They are rushing in to save lives, to save people, to save pets, to save buildings and personal property. And yet every time they put on that gear, it's making them sick. It's giving them cancer. It's giving them fertility problems. And we just want this PFAS out of the gear. And the first step was to get the PFAS industry out of the union. And that was accomplished overwhelmingly. So the new president of the union, IAFF, Ed Kelly, seems to be on board with this. He's very concerned about his fellow firefighters, and he is working very hard to get PFAS out of the gear.
Brian, are you still able to perform your job as a firefighter?
I am.
And how has it affected your work?
Well, initially, when I was going through hormone therapy and chemo, obviously that has its own set of challenges. Chemo in itself is one of the worst possible things that you could ever be on it. The reason why I was put on chemo was I was overproducing estradiol and my testosterone was low. So they tried to bring the estradiol down. So it was challenging. I'm still probably not back 100%, but I'm able to perform all my duties.
It sounds like a real challenge. And again, we're so very sorry that you're and other firefighters throughout the country and maybe even the world are having to go through this. Kyla, do you know, are there any countries, perhaps maybe in Europe, that the United States could emulate with using a different kind of gear? Or is anybody developing another kind of gear?
So there are two companies in the U.S. that now have created a PFAS-free outer layer. The problem is the middle layer. That
it moisture does, barrier.
Yeah, the moisture barrier. Thank you, Brian, that still contains PFAS. And I know that Australia was looking into it. But unfortunately, there is no gear available either in Europe or in other countries that is PFAS free. So this is a worldwide problem. And, you know, one thing that Brian said that really struck me is that he's still recovering and he's still going through these medical issues. But every time he's put out on a fire, he has to put that gear on. Can you imagine what that does to these men and women who have to put on this gear that they know is making them sick to do their job? It must be absolutely horrifying. So we are working hard to try to get the option out there for these fire stations to buy PFAS-free gear. But it doesn't just affect the firefighters. It affects the communities where these fire stations are, because remember, every time they wash this gear in the washing machines, that water then becomes contaminated with PFAS and it's put out into the wastewater treatment plants, or if it's a septic system, out into the groundwater. So these fire stations are actually contaminating the municipalities in which they're located. So they're not only harming the firefighters themselves, but also the municipalities in which they live and work.
An incredibly complex problem that just, it's the gift that seems to keep on giving. And I say that in not a funny way at all. Our guest today, if you just joined us, Brian Goodman. He comes from a military family. He's calling us from Virginia. He's experiencing medical issues as a result of the protective gear that the firefighters have to wear when they go to a fire. He's a lieutenant at a Greater Metropolitan Fire Department. And also joining us today, Kyla Bennett. She's from the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility group called PEER, which is a nonprofit. She's the science policy advisor. And both these folks have been working together to try to get the firefighters gear that is safer. And Kyla, I imagine that PEER also, since you're located in Washington, D.C., you're there for a reason. I imagine that you also have a heavy lobbying influence in Washington, D.C. also.
Well, we don't really lobby as a 501c3 nonprofit. We don't spend much time lobbying, but we are trying to change, as I said earlier, the standards that are requiring this PFAS in the gear. And we do talk to representatives. We've talked to Senator Markey here in Massachusetts, who mentioned actually there was a PFAS hearing in the Senate last week, and Senator Markey mentioned what the firefighters are going through. So they're very aware. There's also Rep. Kildee from Michigan is very into this issue. There are a number, there's a huge bipartisan PFAS caucus at in Washington, D.C. in Congress. And there are many, many people who are working hard to try to ensure that this contamination stops. But really, it's up to the EPA at this point, and they are not doing their job.
The EPA is not regulated. They just have recommendations. If listeners want to contact PEER, what's the easiest way for them to contact PEER, Kyla?
They can get on our website, which is peer.org, so P-E-E-R.org, and we have all of our contact information on that website.
And Brian, you had mentioned before the website militarypoisons.org.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and that also they also work with firefighters?
No, sir. That is Pat Elder's website, who's also trying to get the word out on PFAS.
Yeah, so militarypoisons.org is another resource for folks who are interested in this. And either of you could take this question. The thought occurred to me that police departments use Kevlar quite extensively, and that's, of course, close to their body. Do we know if Kevlar is also contaminated with PFAS?
We have not tested it, and usually PFAS are put into fabrics when they need some kind of water or stain protection. And I can't imagine the Kevlar vests would necessarily need that. But Brian, maybe you know better than I do.
There was one thing that I seen a while back that stated that some of the Kevlar used in military applications does in fact have PFAS. However, just with a simple Google search, I've been unable to find that as of yet. But I do believe that in military applications, it probably does have it.
Kyla, do you know if the firefighters who are in the military also are being, we know that they're being exposed because they have similar gear or the same gear.
Yep.
Is any protections being offered to them?
No, I mean, it's unfortunately no. And as you pointed out earlier, when you asked Brian about who's paying for all these tests, insurance companies aren't wanting. I mean, PFAS testing is very expensive, right? There are 9,252 PFAS substances, according to EPA. We can only test for 70 of them. So an article that came out earlier this year in 2021, a scientific article by Dr. Graham Peasley and a bunch of other researchers, show that there's so much PFAS in turnout gear that it's actually in the dust in all fire stations. And for most of it, they couldn't identify which PFAS were there. So we can't even measure the type of PFAS that's in the gear because we don't know what it is. There's so much confidentiality around these chemicals that manufacturers aren't going to tell us what it is. They claim it to be CBI or EPA just doesn't know. But there's thousands and thousands of these chemicals. We don't know the chemical formulas for the vast majority of them, and therefore we can't test for them. So that creates a whole nother problem. So someone like Brian, who wants to, if he wanted to get his blood tested for PFAS, they can only test for 70. We have no idea what other ones he's been exposed to. And it could be many, many more. It could be way more damaging than we even know, but we can't measure it because we don't have the test for it.
When I took the test as part of the PEASE study, because that's where I was stationed for 4 years, they took a blood sample and a urine sample. And I didn't know at the time, I knew they were testing for PFAS, but I had no idea that they're only testing for 70 of these. And you said, Kyla, I believe there's over,
9,252. Yep.
9,252 and growing. And of course, every time that, states are regulating PFAS now, and it's a hodgepodge way of trying to, bring some sanity to this issue that just is absolutely incredible. I mean, remember when Aaron Brockovich exposed chromium-6 in the water there in Hinckley, California? It was a huge, huge deal. But that issue was confined to the area of Hinckley. This is much, much greater in scope and much that this is, one, had been allowed to be marketed, and two, that EPA is not
doing their job. So if we're going to start somewhere, where do we start? I mean, we've already started, but what's the most effective way for, say, like the layperson that says, you know what, this is incredible. You know, firefighters are a very, very important part of our community. And I know from personal experience that they are. They saved our unit, and we were so very, very grateful. You know, we owe, you know, firefighters, police officers, the same kind of due diligence that we owe folks that are in the military. They are serving their communities and their country, and they deserve the best that we can give them. And certainly by having to wear articles that are contaminated with PFAS. And Brian, my hat's off to you that you're still working and going there and putting that coat on, that protective gear on, when I don't know if I could go back, especially with everything that you've been through and that your wife's been through. You know, you had mentioned before that your wife was pregnant.
We thought she was pregnant, yeah.
Are you guys trying to have children, knowing that, you know, these chemicals are in your body?
Yeah, sure. So what my wife and I are doing right now is we're taking time to reflect. Obviously, 2020 and 2021 have kind of been a sucker punch, right? So we just wanted to take a little bit of time for ourselves and reflect and figure out what our next moves are.
And certainly wish you the best there. And I know it's got to be very difficult. So, Kyla, what is PEER's main thrust right now as far as dealing with PFAS? Because I talk about some of the other issues that PEER handles, and then where the PFAS contamination fits into PEER's program.
We handle everything environmental. So we have a case out in Colorado with air modelers. We have endangered species cases. We work on the North Atlantic right whale and their entanglements in fishing gear and getting hit by ships. So we do everything, but we've been doing more and more pesticide and chemical work because we've really reached a critical point in this nation. And so what we're doing is we're pushing EPA very, very hard to regulate all PFAS as a class. They've got this approach right now. Now, remember, there's 9,252 of these things, according to EPA, and they're regulating them. They're considering regulating them one at a time. And even the states like Massachusetts, where I am, we regulate six PFAS, six out of 9,252. That's not very many. But, so what we're pushing them to do, all scientists are pushing them to do, is to regulate them as a class and to just say this class of 9,000 plus chemicals has to be regulated and all non-essential uses have to be banned. Because honestly, you can find alternatives for virtually all of the uses of PFAS. They were discovered accidentally back in the 1940s. And yes, they're handy for your nonstick frying pans and, you know, your stain resistant carpets. But given the health effects of this class of chemicals, it's just not worth it. So our main goals is to try to press EPA to regulate them as a class and ban all non-essential uses.
So any kind of a Teflon coated frying pan would contain PFAS?
Yes. Teflon is a PFAS.
Teflon is a PFAS. Okay.
Teflon is a PFAS. Yep. So any nonstick, in fact, we're about to do a FTC complaint on the advertising that all of these nonstick pans, they say PFOA free. Well, PFOA is just one of those over 9,000 chemicals. So if it doesn't have PFOA, big deal. It's got one of the other ones. You shouldn't be using any nonstick cookware. Just don't use stainless steel or cast iron. Those are really your only two choices.
So that's something that people can do right away to protect themselves from PFAS is to go to stainless steel or cast iron. Kyla, what about these expensive coats and everything that people have bought from L.L. Bean are Vortex?
Yep. Those are all people. I threw out my old rain gear and I just bought some from a company that makes PFAS-free rain gear. So if they make PFAS-free rain gear, and they can make, there's also a new fabric called Dyneema, D-Y-N-E-E-M-A. It's PFAS-free, but it's waterproof. It's really strong, and it's being used for tents and backpacks and things like that. So it's possible to make fabric that does the same thing as the PFAS contaminated fabric. We just have to, you know, we have to use the power of our purchasing power to make sure that we have to basically boycott everything PFAS until and unless the federal government steps in and says enough is enough. We can't be using this stuff anymore.
And Peer is advocating that the whole class of PFAS chemicals be banned. And the first part of that is to stop producing these chemicals. But of course, 3M and DuPont are major players of Washington, D.C., and of course, in Delaware, where President Biden is from. I believe that's where DuPont headquarters are located, are they not?
I believe they are. Yes, it's and our new EPA administrator, Michael Regan, is from North Carolina, which is where Chemours is based, and they're a big PFAS. In fact, when he headed up the North Carolina Department of Environment down there, he was involved in a lot of PFAS enforcement cases. And it's hard. They're very powerful, very rich industries, and they're getting away with murder, literally. I don't know if you saw the movie Dark Waters with Mark Ruffalo about Rob Ballot's attempts to hold DuPont accountable for the PFAS contamination. If you haven't seen it, or if any of your listeners have not seen it, I highly recommend it. It's a great movie. It's a docudrama, basically, a real story about what happened with DuPont and these PFAS chemicals and how an entire town in West Virginia was poisoned.
Excellent information, Brian. When you respond to a fire, how do you know what kind of fire it is and how do you figure out what you're going to use on it? You're going to spray water on it, or are you going to use these foam and the different truck? I mean, do you have a truck that just has foam only, or how does that work?
Well, most places in Virginia, Don, they'll carry like 20 and 20 of Class A and Class B foam. So typically Class B foam is going to be used on like fuel spills and stuff like that. Class A foam is what we consider a knockdown foam. That's what we'll use for car fires, house fires, et cetera. The Class A stuff is generally what we use, right? Unless we have an industrial accident, we got to swap over to Class B. So for most departments' day-to-day operations that carry foam on their trucks, they're going to use Class A. And the Class A is the universal gold. And we usually, you know, this is nationally, we usually don't see a switchover to the universal green Class B foam, unless it's like a large industrial accident. So anything, you know, so they have a conscience on large industrial accidents, right? Which happen probably pretty rarely where they're using a universal green fluorine free foam. Right. So day to day operations, we're using foam that very much has PFAS in it. And that is nationally. Right. So you're looking at exposure risk over time and how many times you're getting dinged on using that foam. And, you know, the exposure risk is substantially higher for using a Class A knockdown foam day to day operations versus using a fluorine free foam on a rarely happening industrial large accident. And it doesn't happen that much. It's what we call a high risk, low occurrence incident. Like, it doesn't occur a whole lot, but when it does, it's a pretty high risk.
What do you say to rookies that show up at the station?
Do an exposure report every single day. I have my rookies do an exposure report every single day. And we list it as PFAS and unknown causes. You know, we don't know the depth and the scope of what PFAS is going to do to us. But we need to all, as firefighters in this nation, we need to document in an exposure report every day, because that's probably going to be the one key piece of evidence that saves our tails if anything happens medically in the future.
We now pause for station identification.
You are listening to Friendly Fire on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and on the web at gmcr.org. And now, back to Friendly Fire with Don Kimball.
He's absolutely right. That's critical. And that's a really good point, Brian.
Document, document, document. I would even think, you know, once this issue starts getting tracked, that it would be hard to recruit for firefighters. Who wants to do that? Who wants to expose themselves to something like that?
Well, we're already, you know, with everything going on in our country today, we're already seeing low numbers in, you know, what we call rolling recruitment processes, to where we are so low and we've been unable to catch up that we just keep recruit classes going all the time. There's no stop. We never catch up. And we hope to continue to get the word out.
It's firefighters like Brian who is brave enough to come forward. And, you know, talking about male infertility is not something that most men want to do. And he's courageous enough to come forward because he doesn't want other men to suffer the same thing that he's going through. And it puts putting a personal story and a face to these health issues, I think, really helps make people understand how awful this stuff is and how it can really affect people's lives. So I think Brian is incredibly courageous, not just because he's a firefighter, but because he's willing to talk about this publicly. It cannot be easy.
It can't be easy. Depressing to think that the chemical companies have been getting away with this for so long. And Kyla, maybe you could speak to this. And then Brian, if you want to also, I think the public is somewhat uneducated on the issue. And that's what we hope to do with shows like this, is educate the public about these problems. But also, what can we do about learned helplessness, where Americans have been poisoned for so long with so many chemicals that it's just kind of like fait accompli. Oh, well, it's just one more chemical and I'm going to go on wearing Gore-Tex and cooking in a Teflon coated pan, both of which I have in this unit right now. And I'm like, I've got to throw away my, you know, these jackets are pricey, but you know, what price health, right? What can we do? Kyla and Brian, which both of you could feel the question, to get the public's attention on this. And of course, you know, trying to cut through all the noise that's out there about everything. And let's face it, the country is in crisis and, you know, in so many arenas, whether you want to talk about Black Lives Matter, immigration issues. Let's not forget over 500,000 people in this country died of COVID-19. How do we get the public's attention on this?
That's a great question, Don. And it's really difficult to answer because there are two things going on, I think, that affect the way people deal with this. One is they believe that if something is legal, it's safe. A lot of people think that the government protects them. And the inconvenient truth here is that in the case of chemicals, things like PFAS and pesticides and other chemicals, we are not protected by the EPA. And so you can't assume that because something is in consumer products out on the market, it's safe. In this country, here in the US, what we do is we assume that chemicals are innocent until proven guilty. And often it falls to small nonprofits like Peer or academic researchers to prove that something, that a chemical is bad. It shouldn't be that way. In the EU, they do it the reverse. A chemical is guilty, assumed guilty until the company can prove that it's innocent. And that's really, we need a total culture shift at the regulators, at the federal regulation level. The second reason I think that people are not taking this seriously is because PFAS is odorless, colorless, tasteless. When you take water out of your tap, you can't tell it's there. So when I tell people they have PFAS in their drinking water, they go, oh, my water tastes fine. Yeah. No, that's not the problem. The problem is you can't smell it, see it, or taste it. You really need to listen to the scientists. And there's been such an anti-science sentiment lately that it's really difficult to get that across to people.
And that, yeah, because of the pandemic, it's not so much, it's like facts don't matter anymore. It's more like feelings. And it's going to be a very difficult problem to overcome. But we do appreciate you being here today and giving us this information. Brian, any closing thoughts about where you're going to go, you and your wife are going to go from here?
Yeah, so last week I did get PFAS tested. Of course, you know, the insurance doesn't cover that. Luckily, I do have a partnership with Virginia Commonwealth University and trying to hopefully get a research project off the ground and start investigating this further with firefighters, PFAS, and infertility. So with their guidance, we were able to kind of simplify the process on how to get PFAS tested on the East Coast. And we found a lab in close to Willow Grove, Pennsylvania, that will do the testing. They have an account with LabCorp. So if you get a doctor's order, you can go to any LabCorp on the East Coast, get your blood drawn, and then they'll send it. The issue is that it's $635 and it's not covered by insurance. With that being said, where we go from here is my wife is 100% on board. She realizes the importance of this. We both work in the service industry, so we like giving back to our community. We like protecting and educating. So we are going to continue our crusade in trying to make all 9,000 of the PFAS chemicals banned. And as far as personally, we're going to take some time, we're going to reflect, and then we're going to come together and figure out where we go from here.
Well, good luck with all of that, and best to you both. And Kyla, closing thoughts?
I think everyone has to realize that it's a matter of minimizing their own risk. And you can do that by, again, using your purchasing power. Don't buy this stuff. You know, ask questions of manufacturers because they're a little bit, they can be disingenuous. Search for PFAS-free consumer items. And there's actually a website out there that if you Google or go to any search engine and type in PFAS-free goods, a website will come up which shows you all of the things that are PFAS-free that you can buy instead of the normal PFAS-laden stuff. But for people like Brian, he can't minimize his risk because it's his job to be exposed to this stuff right now. So the way to help firefighters like Brian is to contact your representatives and your senators and say, we want PFAS banned. It's not fair to these heroes to force them to continue to be exposed to this stuff. And we just need to keep pushing until the federal government takes control and does something.
Could somebody who's been exposed to PFAS as part of their job go to, you know, the state and say, hey, you know, I want workman's compensation, I want unemployment, and I'm not going to expose myself to any more of this because I've already been overexposed?
Yeah, I wish. The problem is that, you know, everyone's fighting us on, well, is it the foam that's giving them these infertility problems and the testicular cancer and the brain cancer? Or is it the gear? It's very, very difficult to say that, you know, compound A produces disease B. It's really hard to make that connection statistically. And so we will get pushback on that. And the only way, I mean, we know in 2019, 75% of online duty deaths for firefighters was due to cancer. 75%. That's just crazy. So we have to just keep pushing. And there are class action lawsuits that are going on both for water contamination and also a firefighter class action lawsuit. So hopefully if we start winning in court, that will get these people the relief that they need, the monetary relief and the injunctive relief that they need to stay safe from these chemicals.
So people have to be careful about what they wear, about what they cook with, where they work, and what they eat, because fish are heavily contaminated with PFAS now. In the state of Maine, the State Department of Environmental Protection has put out a memorandum recommending that pregnant women or nursing women, in some cases, do not even eat any freshwater fish in Maine. And this is an incredible statement of Maine. And you can't eat the fish here. I mean, for those of us who, you know, have been to Maine and done, you know, fishing for brook trout and stuff, I mean, it's incredibly sad that it's everywhere. And there are water filters, are there, Kyla, that people can install in their home to remove PFAS? Because I believe the Pat Elder said the safe level of PFAS is one part per trillion in water, with a T.
Yeah, so Dr. Linda Birnbaum, who used to head up the NIHES, said that actually for PFOA, just one of the 9,000, the safe level should be 0.1 parts per trillion. But yes, there are filters. The NSF has a list of water filters that are certified to take out PFAS. And I have one in my house. I've encouraged all of my friends and neighbors to get one. Our water is contaminated here in Massachusetts. About 50 to 75% of the towns in Massachusetts are contaminated. So everybody should get a filter. Absolutely. Everyone should get a filter because it is that dangerous. And it's not just freshwater fish. It's in lobster, scallops, crabs, oysters. We found it in deer meat. We found it in food off the grocery store shelves, in bottled water off the grocery store shelves. It's everywhere. And the only way that we're going to stop this is by stop manufacturing it.
I think perhaps we need to come up with a new word to describe the scope and the danger that these PFAS forever chemicals present. Because, I mean, even radioactivity, okay, take, you know, there's no safe level of radioactivity, and we know that is cumulative, but at least radioactivity has a half-life. Eventually, it will dissipate and go away, but PFAS, no.
Well, PFAS has a half-life too, but unfortunately for some of them, it's something like 12 years, so it's going to stay in your body for 12 years.
And it just accumulates while you're being exposed.
And absolutely incredible. Again, thank you guys both for being here. Our guest today, a lieutenant in a Greater Metropolitan Fire Department, comes from a military family who has been exposed to PFAS and is undergoing medical treatments for it. Brian Goodman, calling from Virginia, and Kyla Bennett. She's the science policy advisor from PEER, the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. I'd like to thank you both again for being here on Friendly Fire, and keep up the great work. I know it's got to be very, very challenging, but you know, you're out there doing the right thing, and hopefully we'll start to see some changes. If we don't get changes in the EPA and the Biden administration, I don't know if we can hope for any in the future. So that seems like a good place to start. People can call their senators and their Congress people and ask them to make sure that the EPA starts addressing these issues, and we'll just do the best we can from there.
We got to keep pushing, Don.
Yes, thank you, Don, for covering such an important issue. I really appreciate it.
And we hope you enjoyed today's show with firefighter Brian Goodman and Kyla Bennett, the science policy advisor for PEER, the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. Are you a veteran in crisis or concerned about one? Contact the Veterans Crisis Line, 1-800-273-8255, 1-800-273-8255. 273-8255. And no veteran should be without a place to call home. You can call 1-877-424-3838 to access VA services for homeless and at-risk veterans. That's 1-877-424-3838. Hey, don't forget to like Friendly Fire on Facebook. And we continue our campaign to ask President Biden to pardon United States Air Force veteran and whistleblower Reality L. Winner. Please call the White House comment line at 202-456-1414 and ask for President Biden to pardon Reality Winner. That's 202-456-1414 and ask President Biden to pardon United States Air Force veteran and whistleblower Reality L. Winner, who released one document showing that there was Russian interference in the 2016 presidential campaign. And we thank you. Well, that's a wrap from the Sacred Feather Studios. We hope to see you again next week here on Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans. Special thanks to Ken Kepler. Till next time, stay safe, be well, peace, and love.
You have been listening to Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans with Don Kimball, who is himself an Air Force veteran. Friendly Fire is broadcast every Friday at 10 a.m. and rebroadcast on Tuesday at 6 p.m. right here on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and on the web at gmcr.org.